Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com.
Hi, this is Leo, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles on Sunday, December 3rd, 2006. This is show 306.
December 3rd, 2006.
KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. It's 11:07. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Thank you, Lisa. Good morning, everyone. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy on KFI. I'm here till 2 o'clock to talk tech with you. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number if you'd like to join me and talk about high tech. 1-800-520-1534. And when I say tech, I mean, oh, a whole variety of things. Not just Mac or Windows or the internet or Linux or MP3 players, but cell phones too, home theater. Nowadays, you know, I just got a big screen TV. Even a TV is a computer nowadays. It's a Pioneer plasma. They make excellent plasmas. And I'm reading through the manual, which is something I don't usually do, I must say. Rarely read the manuals. But this time I felt, well, I probably should learn how to use this thing because it's pretty complicated. I get to the back. It's got the GPL in the back. That's the open source license agreement. It's very long, very techy, and it's required to be included anytime you use an open source product. I thought, what could they be using? It turns out this television, plasma television, runs Linux, the free and open source operating system. Doesn't run Windows, which seems probably sensible. Doesn't run OS X, which would be crazy. It runs Linux. I don't even know why a TV needs an operating system, but it does, I guess. Nowadays, I mean, that's the thing. They're so complicated. You see, everything we use nowadays in technology is a computer. I was playing the folks in the chat room yesterday. Just went crazy over the latest beta version of a program called Parallels. Parallels is a program that lets you run one operating system inside another one. It's kind of a wrapper. And it's very cool. I mean, there have been other programs like this. VMware has been around for a long time. But Parallels is new. And the thing about Parallels is it was the first and it came out earliest for Intel Macs to allow them to run Windows. In fact, it's one of the best reasons nowadays to buy a Mac is, you buy the Mac, you get the ability to run both OS X and Windows if it's an Intel Mac. Well, the newest beta that just came out, and boy, it's hard to find. I will put a link in the show notes. I think it's probably the easiest way. If you're using an Intel Mac, you're going to want to try this out. It's free to try, I think, for 30 days. Wow. I was talking yesterday about how really the thing people care most about, they don't care about operating systems. Normal users, it's not about the operating system. It's about the applications. It's about what you do with the computer. And if a computer does something well, they don't really care what's underneath. I guess because the operating system is so visible, I mean, you might care how it looks, but or how you use it, or you know what the menu commands are. But really, you just want to use the computer to do stuff. That's what you care about. Well, this new Parallels really is, as far as I'm concerned, kind of the holy grail of computing. You run it, and it has something called a coherence mode that allows you to, let's say I'm running OS X, also running Windows. I run Office, let's say, Microsoft. In fact, I'm playing with Word Office 2007, which just came out, so I'm running Word 2007. Won't be out for consumers until January 30th when Vista's out, but you can. They had a beta test, so I'm running that. And here's the beauty of it. It's not like in a Parallels window, in a Windows window. It's running as a Mac window next to my other Mac stuff. Suddenly, I don't care what operating system. I can run Windows, Mac. I can even run Linux software that way. If you have enough RAM, you need enough RAM because each operating system requires its own big chunk of RAM. suddenly on a new high-end Intel Mac, you can run any operating system, and it's now as if they're all running at the same time, and you just go from window to window. You don't even have to think about it. It is very slick, and it is exactly what I've been hoping for from the day I heard Apple was going to go Intel. It's a big step closer to the idea that the operating system doesn't matter, just the applications you run on it. You know, when you get your iPod, you don't ask, what does my iPod run on? You know, what does my iRiver run on? You don't care. There is an operating system. They're computers, absolutely. They may not have a keyboard, but they're computers. There's no mouse, but they have to do the same things in any operating system, any computer does. Open files, decode the files, play them back for you. There's no word processor, but otherwise it's a computer. And that's the point. You don't look in the back of the book to see what your TV's running. You don't look on your iPod to see what operating system it's on. These are just utilities. They're applications. They're appliances. And I think that that's a key transition, frankly, for computers. For them to be really accepted by real people instead of enthusiasts, the people who care enough about them to learn all the ins and outs of a particular operating system, but by real people who just want to write a letter or send an email or browse the web or edit their movies. This is a huge step forward. You just do it. You just buy whatever program you want. You run it. You just do it. I like it. Parallels. Parallels. This may be the... I have to say, at this point, it is the most important program of 2006. You got 3 weeks, guys, to come up with something better. I think there's no doubt about it. Significant. And by the way, it is available on Windows. Won't run Macs on Windows, alas, thanks to Apple's restrictive copyrights. But it will. See, Apple thinks of itself as a hardware company, not an operating system company. They want you to buy a Mac from them. But it will run Linux on Windows, and it will run other versions of Windows on Windows. So if you go to Vista, as many of you will, and you want to keep XP or 98, it'll be very easy to do that. And it's affordable. I think it's $80 on the Mac, and I think now there's a special deal. It's a good deal. Now, I have said that the key for Vista is to be more secure than XP. There are lots of great new things in Vista. The more I explore it, this is the new version of Windows. It's out for business. It came out for business on Thursday. It's out for everybody else January 30th. If you buy a new computer after January 30th, it will come with Vista installed, so you might as well get used to it. If you buy a new computer now, most new computers come with a coupon for a Vista upgrade. The world is moving towards, that's the next version of Windows. But the burden is on Microsoft to make it more secure, right? This has been the problem with XP. Viruses and spyware. Ugh. Already we're seeing, I'm sorry to say, spyware and viruses for Vista. Now, in this, at least for now, it only happens to people who download pirated editions of Vista. But you'd be sure if you said, "Oh, I'm going to buy Vista when it comes out, but I just want to get it early," and you went out on the net and you looked for Vista on the net, be very careful. There are Vista images being distributed right now. Look real. They install just like real Vista, but they've got deeply embedded with them viruses, malware. And I'm not just talking about adware. I'm talking about really bad rootkit viruses that allow your computer to be taken over and used by hackers to attack other computers on the internet or to spread spam. Hard to believe, but we're seeing it already. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that Vista's insecure. If you're dumb enough to download a copy of an operating system from an untrusted source, excuse me, hello. I mean, they could do anything they want. There's a download circulating on the crackboards. This is from an Australian PC magazine, apcmag.com. It's circulating around the boards. You know, there's message boards, there's websites devoted to cracking software, to removing copy protection from software illegally. The one that's out there right now is called Windows Vista All Versions Activation 211106. It's a crack, they say, for Vista. It's actually a Trojan horse. It'll install a Trojan horse onto your computer. Serious problem. In fact, it's, you know, they intentionally in Vista made it so that it's all a big lump install off of DVD, so it's possible to slipstream stuff into that lump. So that's why we presume that there are going to be copies of Vista with bad stuff pre-installed. Get it from Microsoft. If you're going to get it, make sure it's a real copy. And yeah, you're going to have to be careful with Vista. It's not, you know, even though the guy who developed it for Microsoft, who was the lead on the Vista team, the president of Microsoft, Jim Alchin, said, I would let my kid use Vista without an antivirus. I'm not recommending it. I would not. I think you're going to have to be just as careful. I'm testing it now, the final release version. I'll be working with it between now and January 30th to get to know it intimately, its pros and cons, its weaknesses, as well as its strengths, and we'll continue to talk about it. So don't worry. Before you get a chance to run it, you will know what to do to protect it, whether it's safe. Just keep listening. I am Leo Laporte. We're going to take your calls, 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1117.
Matt Drudge.
It truly is the ego of man to think we can't control this. Why can't we point out the low temperatures when they point out the high temperatures? If it was 105 degrees, they would be saying it's global warming. So why do we have to sit here zipped up when it's 70 degrees on an August day?
Matt Drudge, tonight 7 to 10. AM 640.
Live online.
KFI, AM640.com.
Folks, if you are trying to get online with an old modem going, remember that? You wait half a minute, and then you're online. Sounds like you're at the dentist's office, but then you're online, but then what? Everything trickles in. You can't download movies from YouTube, music from iTunes. You're not really part of the internet generation, shall we say. You need high speed, and if you've got a need for speed, there's only one way to go, DSL Extreme. That's how I connect to the internet, and I can highly recommend it, but best of all, you've got to love the price. They've lowered it again to $12.95 a month. Even if you have high speed, if you're paying more, and I can pretty much assure you are, you might want to move to DSL Extreme. You get free spam protection, the modem's free. 24-hour-a-day free local tech support. There are no setup fees, no additional services to buy. It's just $12.95 a month for the first year for new customers. Certain geographic restrictions apply, so you better call 866-2-GET-NET right now, 866-2-G-E-T-N-E-T. You can also visit them online at dslextreme.com. High-speed internet for less than the price of a car wash a month. $12.95 a month. Get it right now by calling 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme.
According to the LA Times, they're two of the most powerful people in town. John and Ken, tomorrow, 3 to 7.
KFI, AM 640.
1124, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. We continue with our international callers. I tell you, we get them from all over the world. We had, Montreal and Honduras yesterday, and now from Germany, Stephen. Hello, Stephen. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. I have a question to you about, I'm doing a website for my church here, and I don't know how much I should charge them.
Ah, well, how generous do you want to be to the church? You know, are you just designing it for them? Are you writing software for them? Are you going to continue to run it for them? I mean, it depends.
All of it.
All of it. My web designers, I think, charge $150 an hour, which I think is pricey, especially when I had to write the check. I would charge by the hour for something like that and keep very good records of it. And I don't know what the going rate is in Germany, obviously.
It's my first one I'm doing for pay. I did a few before, but mostly without pay.
Yeah. So you're starting out, you're doing them a favor. They're obviously not loaded. because it's a church.
No.
So what I would say is, in general, a webmaster, the guy who's doing all of this, is a professional. So not quite a doctor or a lawyer, but close. Whatever a graphic artist would charge per hour in Germany, perhaps, given that you're new and just starting out, maybe half what a kind of mid-range lawyer would charge, attorney would charge, that kind of range. You know, I would say, you know, to put it in U.S. dollars, and I don't know if this will be meaningful to you at all, I would say probably 50.
Yeah, it would be.
It would be? Yeah, I'd say $50
an
hour.
Yeah, I lived in the U.S. 3 years. So.
Oh, okay. So I'd say around $50, $75 an hour would be reasonable. As I said, a really pro, high-end web design firm charges me about $150 an hour. And I know that some charge $250 an hour. But I think maybe $50 to $75 an hour would seem like a fairly reasonable amount of money. And then you just have to be very careful about keeping track of your hours.
Yeah, so it's for, I'm doing the PHP. I have it pre-written from another website. Most of it have to do a little optimization,
right,
and
well, that's why I
little
I,
layout I
yeah,
have.
That's why I feel it's fairer to charge hourly rate than a project rate, because it won't take you as long to get that up and running because you've already put the work into it. Now, the church may say, well, we really, that's so open-ended, we're uncomfortable with that. And in this case, I think it's very common to not only charge an hourly rate, but then to also give kind of an estimate and maybe even a peak amount of money that you would be, you know, charging, so that they don't feel like it can get out of spin out of control and they could owe you tens of thousands of dollars. So you might say, well, I estimate that this is going to take me 20 hours to get set up, and then I'll be spending 10 hours a month on it. So I would like, $5,000 up front, and then I'll be charging you a few hundred dollars a month consulting, that kind of thing. But that, you know, it's also your conscience and what you think you're worth. I don't know. This is an interesting field. There's no magic number. There are online sites, salary survey sites and so forth, but I don't think they're very useful, because everybody has a different skill set they're bringing. You know, you're new at it, so you're going to get something out of it. You're looking for something for your portfolio that's going to be something you can use to get better jobs down the road, but you've got to eat, and you're going to be working hard on this. You're doing it for a nonprofit organization, so you know they probably don't have deep pockets. But if they're sold on you and they really believe you can do a good job, you know, I would say, you know, it's not $20 an hour, and it's probably not $100 an hour. It's probably more around $50-$60 an hour would be reasonable. I mean, it's very skilled work, and that's the thing. I mean, They're taking advantage of the years of time you've spent in school studying programming and the hours and hours you've worked on this stuff. So good luck. I think that's a wonderful thing. And I'm so glad you're listening in Germany. In fact, I'm looking at the board here. We've got callers from Maryland, Massachusetts, Colorado, and Germany, and only a couple of callers from Southern California. So come on, Southern California, 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:29. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
Hate that behind-the-eight-ball Monday morning feeling? Stay in the loop all weekend long. More stimulating weekends.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, should be put up in the show notes at leo.am. Another article about a problem with Vista. It's vulnerable, this is nice, to malware from 2 years ago. According to the security vendor Sophos, three well-known internet worms, Stratio Zip, Netsky D, oh, I remember Netsky, and MyDoom O, all work and infect Vista. So will you need an antivirus on Vista? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Now, I wonder what happens on Vista 64, where it's a little bit more secure. The reason I ask is the antiviruses don't run on Windows 6 and Vista 64 bit. So it's scary out there. According to security researchers, Vista is excellent, but it hasn't really changed the security landscape. You still need antivirus, firewalls, and patches, at least. Fortunately, it comes with an anti-spyware program. Defender is built into Vista. The Vista kernel and its kernel protection, its patch protection, that was hacked a while ago, too. So really, it's just it's business as usual, unfortunately. I'm sorry to say. And the reason is clear. I mean, Microsoft cannot modify Vista so much that existing software and hardware doesn't work. Would you buy it if all of a sudden none of the programs you have worked? None of the hardware you have worked? You might not. So, and this is the problem, the catch-22 Microsoft has been in since Windows 95. They can't do the fixes they need to do to make Windows secure without breaking everything. They made a minor fix in the 64-bit version of Windows only, this patch protection, this patch guard technology that prevented anybody but Microsoft from modifying the kernel. And there were which is, by the way, great security procedure. That's how it should be. It shouldn't be anybody can modify the fundamental system operating files. They shouldn't be modifiable. Microsoft said, well, you know, we've told people not to in the past and they do it anyway. So we're going to make 32-bit Vista, which most people will be getting and using. We're going to make that compatible so that, you know, people won't go crazy. But on the 64-bit version of Vista, we're going to lock it down. And you heard howls from Adobe, from McAfee, from Symantec. They were furious. They said, our software won't work. Well, that's right. That's right. And that's the problem for Microsoft. How do we balance compatibility with security? You can't. It's one or the other. And I don't blame them for making the decision for compatibility, but you should just know, it's pretty clear from stories that are already coming out. And it's not even January 30th. Houston, we got a problem. 1-800-520-1KFI. Back to the phones we go, and we'll go to Orange County. Patty is on the line. Hey, Patty, welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course. Thank you for calling.
I have an old computer that I would like to put out to e-waste.
Yes.
But I've swapped out parts so many times, it doesn't boot up anymore, and I don't know. What I want to do is I want to erase the hard drive before I put it out to e-waste.
Oh, of course you do. And there's a very simple way to do that. It's floppy disk-based, so you don't need the hard drive to boot. It is free, and it's called Derix, D-A-R-I-K, Derix Boot and Nuke. Or D-Ban. If you do a Google for D-B-A-N, you'll find it. It'll be the number one link. It's absolutely free. You just put it on a floppy disk, and it will erase the hard drive and everything on it using a strong erase. You know, write, erase, write, erase, write, erase. The Department of Defense security level.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, it's great. It's a wonderful program. Highly recommended. Millions of people use it safely, reliably. Somebody sent me a email saying, well, you recommended Derix Boot and Nuke, but I don't know. With a name like Boot and Nuke, it's got to be spyware or viruses, right? No, it's not. It's open source. It's completely safe. Because it's open source, we know it's safe. We can see what it's doing. And it's very, very effective. You will clean your hard drive of everything. Anything that's on it is gone. And according to the website on SourceForge, it hinders even known techniques of hard disk forensic analysis. Things like looking in the slack space or the swap drive, it's gone. So highly recommended. Good program. Chef Jeff Van Nuys. Hey, Chef Jeff.
Hey, Leo. I really want to thank you.
How's your Hamantaschen?
With my favicon and all that stuff.
Did you try that? Hamantaschen makes a fantastic favicon.
Yeah, and actually, I just went into Photoshop and made it 16 by 15 and changed the name to the
Well, it has to be an icon format. Did that work?
Yeah.
Oh, you saved it as a .ico file then.
Yeah, and I put it on my website, and it's worked perfectly.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, actually, I really want to commend your listeners, because after I talked to you, I had a lot of listeners call me and give me suggestions and stuff like that.
Oh, so that's great. What's the website?
Your after show is, like, superb, and your website's
great.
Oh,
I know. It's really, it's a community. And, you know, one of the things I really feel like is the most exciting thing about what's happening is this sense of, instead of broadcasting from one person to many, it's a conversation. And that's why we do the website and the chat room and all that stuff. It really
Absolutely.
Is. Yeah.
Well, my question is, you know, I have my site through GoDaddy, and they're hosting my website, but they have a lot of services like, you know, Traffic Blazer, where they submit your site, and shopping carts, and so on and so forth. And I was wondering what you think about their services, what services you think are good or not good.
I like GoDaddy. I mean, they're nice guys. I know them pretty well. They support a lot of podcasts with advertising. Not mine, but they support a lot of podcasts through advertising. I would say, however, and I, by the way, I use them as a registrar too, because they're cheap. I do not use them as a server. They do kind of low traffic serving. So, I mean, they're fine if you don't, but if you start getting a very busy site, it could start costing you a lot of money. So just be aware of that. If things really, what's the website again?
It's advantagecatering.com.
If it starts really getting busy, it's not likely. I mean, you know, the people who are going to go to your site are potential customers.
Yeah, I'm more of a niche caterer, you
right.
know. I mean, I do craft services, and I do, you know, Jewish events, and I do non-Jewish events, but I don't. I'm not a big caterer like.
Right. So you're probably, as a low-traffic site, GoDaddy is a good choice. I'd be careful about some of the things that they offer. I mean, they offer so many services. For instance, the submitting your domain to other search engines, forget about it.
You know, that's the Traffic Blazer thing?
Yeah, that's totally useless.
Okay.
You know, what I would say is, if it's a service you need, like a shopping cart or email, that's going to be fine. That's a web-based service that they're providing from their server. If it's, you know, marketing and stuff like that, I would stay away from it.
Okay.
The problem is, it's hard to tell. They offer, you know, 8,000 different services.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, e-commerce, fine. I mean, I don't know what you would do in e-commerce. I guess you could sell, you know, jars or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, e-commerce is not really what I'm looking at.
No.
But, you know, I was looking at their, you know, I was looking at their Traffic Blazer and their e-marketing.
No, don't do any of the marketing stuff. You can do a better job yourself. Most of that stuff's kind of scammy, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I'm not saying GoDaddy's scamming you, but I'm just saying that it's of limited use. My suggestion, you want to get, look, when it comes to a site like yours, really your only goal is that if somebody searches for Jewish catering, you show up at the top.
Right.
Right. Or Los Angeles Jewish catering or Encino Jewish catering or something like that. You want to show up at the top of those searches. That's all the marketing you really need to do, frankly. And the way to do that is to get other sites to link to you.
Yeah.
The Google looks at who links to you, and that's how they judge how important you are. Continue to update your site with more information. I think a great idea would be a blog, something that would actually add information regularly. Google pays attention to that.
Okay.
Maybe recipe, a weekly recipe. That kind of thing can improve your ranking. And of course, worst case, if you want to spend money, I wouldn't spend money with a market builder, you know, service. I would spend money by buying Google AdWords, by buying catering in Los Angeles, you know, or by Jewish catering. What happens when I Google you? Let me just see. I'm going to Google Jewish catering, because that's really where you'd probably want to show up, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe Jewish craft service. And, yeah, I mean, I don't see you on the first 10.
I don't see me on the first page.
I don't see you on the second page.
I do come up, but I don't come up on the first
maybe
page.
Maybe I need to do Jewish Catering LA. Let's see what I get there. Because really, that's what you're going to want. Somebody's going to narrow it down to location-based. Yeah, yeah. And you're not high enough. You need to. That's where you really want to show up, right at the top.
Yeah.
So,
well, I have a lot of links. I've been linking to a lot of other caterers.
Get them to link to you.
Yeah.
Trading links is really good. And the higher their ranking, you want to trade links with higher ranked sites than yours, right?
Yeah.
You don't even. Yeah, you do show up number one if I do Jewish Catering Encino. That's good. You're number one there.
Okay.
You know, that's the kind of thing. I mean, at least you're showing up on Google, right? You don't show up on Google, you're dead. You're dead. You need to show up on number one. Yeah, you're number five on Jewish Catering Los Angeles. So it's just a question of getting more people to link to you. And if you wanted to buy AdWords, that might be another way to do it. So that if somebody searches for Jewish
buying
catering.
Buying AdWords, I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's google.com/AdWords. And okay. You buy specific search terms. And what happens, let's say you buy catering and Jewish, or Jewish catering as a phrase. When they do the search, the same search results will show up on the left. But on the right, you've probably seen this on Google, there's a little box of ads. And yours will show up there. And that can be very effective. Now, it can also be very expensive, depending on how many other people are buying it. They auction off these words. They're very smart about maximizing their benefit. So if it's a very popular term,
they got a few smart people.
They know what they're doing. If it's a very popular term, it'll cost you more, and you pay per click. But people do it because it works, very effective. And frankly, I think the good news is, you know, maybe a few years ago you would have had to buy Yahoo and Google and a few other things. Now all you need to do is buy Google. Google's the only search engine that counts. 90% of your customers who are going to the web are going to search on Google, and they're going to search for, well, you know what the terms are. Probably, maybe kosher catering. Are you kosher?
Yeah.
All right. So you might want to buy kosher catering. You might want to buy, this other guy, Party Pop. He's got it, man. You gotta look and see who's linking to him.
Party Pop, I'm listening on Party Pop, but he's not linking back to me because I got to pay him to link back.
Now because he shows up so high, that might be a useful place to place your dollar if it's not too expensive.
Yeah.
Because his link back to you would raise your ranking.
Yeah, it's like $150 per search word. Like kosher catering would be one search word.
Yeah, that's comparable to Google. So I would look at that, and I would look at Google. He would give you some advantage because, not so much because you're showing up in the directory. That's part of the advantage. But really, he's also selling his what I call Google juice. The fact that he ranks so high on Google is something that he can sell. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 11:51.
Captain Dale Dye, this evening, 5 to 7.
KFI, AM 640.
11:56. On KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy at KFI. Stan in Boulder, Colorado. Snow coming down yet in Boulder?
Yeah, we've had our share.
Oh, I bet.
Just gone through with a big storm.
I heard.
What I'd like is a recommendation on something to store digital photos, either a digital photo album or a photo frame for my parents who are in their 80s and not really technically astute.
So this is something that you want to give to them so that they can see your digital photos?
Or they have a digital camera and they've been keeping it on their little card.
Right.
And so they really don't take it in to get the photos developed. So now they really can't see what they've shot. So
you know, it's interesting. A lot of new TVs have slots for smart media that you could stick the media in. And
I don't think they've got one of those.
Okay. So. I was amazed at how many now do that. And I think it's a very good idea, actually, because you're exactly right. I mean, if you don't have a computer, how do you look at all these pictures? Now, remember, if they're going to keep them on the memory, they're going to have to buy new memory all the time. So you might want to have something they can offload it onto.
Well, that's what I was thinking about a digital photo album. I've seen some, and I just don't know which ones are the best. I want something with a pretty good size screen, at least 5x7 or larger.
Yeah.
And I don't know I was wondering about storing just on the card versus having like an internal hard drive or something to store pictures on.
Epson really makes an excellent, it's like a little player, basically. I don't know if it's big enough for you. It's designed for offloading. It's designed as like a photo wallet for you. So you would offload, what is it, the P4000? You'd offload, the P4000. That's a little expensive. It's about $650. The idea is you put your memory card in there and you'd offload it onto it, and then they can, and it's got a very nice screen. It looks like the rebates are pretty good on this right now, so you might be able to find it at a good price. And it has, I think, 30 gigs. It has considerable amount of storage, so they could just offload, and then they press a button, their slide shows.
Yeah, I wanted to have to be really, really simple for
80 gigs.
Okay.
I would take a look at those. And there are digital frames. You're seeing a lot of these digital frames. The display on the Epson is 3.8 inches diagonal. So it's about a 4-inch screen.
I've seen one from Polaroid. It's huge. It's 10 inches.
Yeah.
But it mainly is just to look at the picture.
It's a frame. It's more of a frame than anything else. And there are quite a few. Philips makes these. There's even some that you can plug in, and I think this might be a nice thing to do. Plug into the phone jack, and automatically it will call out and get new pictures.
Oh, really?
Which is, so you could have pictures that you'd upload. Let me take a look and see. I remember reading some reviews, and I haven't played with them in the last year, so I'm not sure what's new. Let me look at some reviews out there. We got a break for news anyway, but I'll come back and talk about it some more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It is 11:59. That means it's time to head to the KFI News Center, where Courtney Kramer has the latest.
December 3rd, 2006.
KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks at 12:06. I'm Courtney Kramer, KFI News.
Thank you, Courtney. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the number. A couple of program notes. First of all, I'd mentioned yesterday the just so sad news, and it's now been on CNN and covered all over the place, about my good friend and colleague James Kim and his family. He worked with us on Tech TV. He was one of our lab analysts, was a regular on my TV show Call for Help, went to work for CNET, is an editor there, responsible for the you know, audio beat, the MP3 player beat. Just a great guy, a wonderful guy. His wife and two young children, all four of them have gone missing and been missing for a week. They were in Portland, Oregon for Thanksgiving and were last heard from last Saturday, a week ago Saturday, on the road from Salem to Gold Coast. And they've been searching the roads ever since, and helicopters have been up over the weekend, and just no word at all. So I just put it out there. If you know anything, or you'd like to know what's going on, if you go to my website, twit.tv, I have a link to the family's website and an 800 number you can call, the tip line. We're just worried sick about these guys. Oh, it's just, it's scary. 800-452-7888. And, you know, I've been putting out the word not only on this show and on the website, but also on all my podcasts, and really trying to, hoping, you know, maybe James and his family went somewhere. You know, there was snowing. It was a whiteout. There was heavy snow. Maybe they found some shelter, went somewhere to stay with somebody, and they just don't know people are looking for them. That's all I can hope for at this point. So the more we can get this word out, you know, who knows, maybe they're listening to the radio, I don't know. The more we can get the word out, James, we're looking for you. 800-452-7888. We'll talk about it tonight on I do a live podcast now, which is kind of interesting, called Net at Night. We started this about a month ago. Amber MacArthur, my former co-host on Call for Help, and I, it's just a lot of fun. We do it live on the internet. Now that's a hard thing to do, because the internet isn't, you know, on a radio station, if a million people are listening to this show, and I know they are, it on a radio station, the transmitter doesn't have to work any harder. If it's one person, a million people, doesn't matter. It's out there. If people just pick it up, there's no additional cost for additional listeners. The internet's the exact opposite. Every single person who listens uses bandwidth, which costs you more money. So the economy is more, the business model is more like a magazine, maybe, than it is like radio. You know, every magazine you print costs you money, right? There's a service called TalkShoe, which I just love, TalkShoe, like the shoe you put on your foot, TalkShoe, where people are doing talk shows on the internet, streaming, and they can take calls. I mean, it's really neat. They have a conference bridge, so you can take calls, put that out. And we've been playing with it, and it's just so much fun. Now, we bring the server down every single Sunday night. You know, they promised me, they said they spent $30,000 last week on new hardware. So they promised me it's going to work great this time. I mean, it's fun. We're bringing it down. That means there's a lot of people listening and participating. I think this is going to be a challenge for it, because tonight Kevin Rose will join us. Kevin and I are also good friends with James, and we'll talk a little bit about James. But Kevin is the founder of DIGG.com. He was on the cover of Business Week last month as a $60 million man. Here he is, 30 years old. He's, you know, one of these internet entrepreneurs. His company's been valued at $150 million. And he just built it himself from scratch. It's really a remarkable story. So Kevin will join Amber and me on Net at Night tonight. We do that live at 6 p.m. Pacific. at talkshoe.com. That's going to be a lot of fun. And because we can take calls, if you have a question for Kevin, you can call in. Ryan, Boston, Massachusetts. You've been hanging on a while. Thanks for your patience. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Oh, before I'm great. Before, Brian, I go on, I just wanted to mention there are, I found a number of very inexpensive digital frames, like the Edge digital picture frame, which is $119. And you put the memory card into it. Now, that's the problem, is it doesn't have a hard drive to copy memory off of, but they could take the memory out and they could plug it in and they can see their pictures. And it's got a nice... So these frames are dropping quite a bit. The Edge Tech Corp is where you can find that Edge picture frame. Now, Ryan, thank you for your patience.
That's okay.
What can I do for you?
Quick question. I'm looking into buying an HD camcorder within the next few weeks. I was looking at the Canon HV10.
Yep. David Pogue, my buddy from the New York Times, loved that Canon.
And I have a DVD recorder home with a FireWire input. I was wondering if I transfer that video to that recorder, will I lose the HD quality in the videos when I play it back?
Yes.
Will it downgrade it?
Yeah, you'll have to downgrade it to MPEG-2. You're going to burn it on a CD or a DVD?
I was going to hook it up. I have like a home DVD recorder. I was going to plug it right in.
So you, and if you're going to... Now, here's the deal. If you record it as data...
Yeah.
It'll be exactly the same. It'll be, but you only get a few minutes per disc. It'll be exactly the same. If you record it as a movie that you could play on your DVD player, you're going to have to turn it into MPEG-2.
Okay.
And that will absolutely degrade it down. It'll still be 16:9, and because you're starting with a higher quality input, it probably will look very good. But it will be MPEG-2. It won't be high def.
So my only option would be buying a high def DVD recorder, but they don't exist yet.
They don't exist yet. And that's going to come. In fact, early next year, you'll see Blu-ray recorders.
Yeah, but I'm not spending a grand for that.
It's okay to buy an HV10 now.
Yeah.
And the key is save the data. Don't save it as a movie, playable movie. You can make it a playable movie, but have a copy of the high-quality data. The reason is when you make a DVD to play on a DVD player, you have to encode it in a form the DVD player can read. And one of the limitations is the resolution. So you'll be transcoding it from the high-quality version that was recorded by the HV10 into a lower-quality version to put on the DVD. Just keep the high quality as well, though. And then when you get a Blu-ray, it doesn't have to be next year, in 5 years.
Yeah, just keep the tapes and plug the camcorder right into the TV.
Keep the tapes. And later, when you have a HD DVD recorder, you can make an HD out of it. Yeah, let me put a link to David's review of it. I don't know if you've read it, of the HV10.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, he loved it. Now, the other choice, somewhat, I just put it in the chat room. I know you're in there, so you can see it.
Yeah.
The other choice that, of course, is the Sony HD camcorders, which are fairly inexpensive. The HC3 is around $1,200.
Three, yeah, I was looking at that one, too.
A lot of people like that. So those are your kind of two choices.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it's kind of the form factor, too, because the Canon is more of a palm quarter. The HC3 is more of a standard camcorder form.
Yeah, I do like the size of the Canon. That's what
it's tiny, isn't it?
It is very.
I think if I'm buying a new camcorder at this point, if I'm not price sensitive, because they are over $1,000, I'm looking at the HDs. The image, frankly, is going to be, and I mentioned this yesterday, low light performance. It's bad enough with digital camcorders anyway. And it's an HD camcorder is worse. So you're gonna want lights. If you're shooting indoors, you're gonna want as much light as you can get. But on the other hand, as we're all moving to HD TVs, it seems sensible to also move our camcorders to HD. Aaron in Glen Burnie, Maryland. Hello, Aaron. Welcome to KFI.
Hello, Leo.
What can I do for you today, sir?
I just had to turn up the volume on my speakers here.
I get very quiet all of a sudden when I pick you up. I don't know why that is. It's technology. I don't really understand it.
Gee, you could have surprised me.
I don't get this. Technology stuff is beyond me.
Well, you know, we are digital immigrants, not digital natives.
That's right. There are those growing up with it who live in this digital world and have their whole life, like my kids. But those of us of a certain age, Aaron, we've only come to it lately. What can I do for you today?
Well, a while back, my wife, who I love dearly, spilled some soda on her laptop.
Damn her eyes!
And I did.
Was it diet or was it regular?
Actually, I I think it was regular.
Ah, that's too bad.
But I did save the laptop. I unplugged it.
Oh, it's a laptop. Oy, yoy, yoy, caramba. Oh, so it's really not just your keyboard. She spilled it into the laptop.
Actually, it was just your keyboard because it was one of the older iBooks, and apparently the way they make the keyboard, I got it before the soda could seep through to get to the hard drive and the motherboard and all that stuff.
Yeah, because you would have lost it.
Oh, yeah.
You can replace that keyboard. It's as you noticed, it's on a ribbon cable.
Yes. But I was wondering if, because I'm a cheapskate, I'm broke, but I was wondering if I could use rubbing alcohol if I took the keyboard out and poured that in. Could I get the soda out that way?
Possibly. Let's talk about what happened and what the ramifications are. Liquid, obviously, there's a couple of things that liquid could do to a computer. If it can short circuit it. Now, you were lucky. You didn't get into the computer itself, and you were able to... If you get liquid in a computer or any electronics device, the first thing to do is remove power completely. Pop the battery, unplug it. On a laptop, you got to take the battery out, too. You got to get all the power out of there. That will most likely prevent short-circuiting and frying of the motherboard. I mean, there are still capacitors and stuff that could hold power, but you want to eliminate that issue. Then you want to dry it out and get rid of the liquid, you know, drain it as best you can and let it dry before you give it any more power. You know, I've dropped cell phones in the toilet. You can get them back if you get that battery out fast enough and then dry it out. However, there's a secondary issue. And that's why I asked if it was diet or regular. Even when you dry out sugared drinks, there's a nice film of sugar on that.
Yeah, and all the keys are sticking together, which is why I asked.
And that's your bigger problem at this point, because the sugar means, you've got to somehow wash the thing. Now, if you can remove the keyboard, if you can unplug that ribbon cable, it might take some disassembly. I can't remember if the plug is accessible or not. I've heard of people actually running keyboards through the dishwasher. Believe it or not, in order to clean it off. You probably don't want to do that, but as long as you don't have any power coming to the keyboard, you can bathe it in alcohol or something similar. And that will dissolve the sugar. You need to get rid of that sugar, and then the alcohol will, of course, evaporate. You're actually washing it, though. You're not merely spraying alcohol in there. You've got to wash it off. You're trying to dissolve the sugar and then have it wash off, right? So it might take some applications. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be harmful. There are switches in the keyboard, but they're not. But if there's no power coming to them, there's nothing to short circuit anyway. And the stickiness is the real issue, you know. Worst case, you ruin the keyboard. Make sure, that's why I want you to get it away from the laptop. You know, have it standalone. Worst case, you ruin the keyboard and you replace it. I think you could probably recover it. I have high hopes,
wonderful.
Aaron. I have high hopes for you. Good luck.
And
tell people to keep their sugared liquids away from the keyboard. Yes, what? You have a message?
Yes, could I say hello to everyone in the chat?
Oh, yeah. What's your handle in chat?
Art Guy.
All right. Well, it's good to talk to you, Art Guy. There are a lot of chat people on the show today. We just had Ryan on, too. Thanks for calling. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1219.
When the big stories break, we're on it. KFI News, Fox News.
1226. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. We're chatting with Art Guy in the chat room about cleaning that keyboard. And Les says, and I think he might be right, that alcohol does not dissolve sugar. So Art Guy's wife spilled a soda into the keyboard of his laptop, and we're talking about how you could clean it. And I had mentioned, and this is true, that I know a guy, a radio station engineer, as a matter of fact, who runs keyboards through dishwashers, not with soap, just with hot water. The key is, before you use it again, it's got to be completely dry. There can't be any liquid left. And one hopes no residue of any kind left, because that can be a conductor. And he also mentioned that it doesn't always work. Sometimes it kills them. But keyboards are cheap. And it works enough that if you think about it, a keyboard is a pretty disgusting object. I mean, it should be cleaned in some way. There should be some way to clean it. I would have said probably better than alcohol or water would be contact cleaner, contact solvent, because that's designed for cleaning electrical components, but I don't know if it dissolves sugar. I really don't know. Les suggests distilled water, and that's a good point. You don't want to use tap water because there are hard minerals in there that will leave a residue behind. The idea is getting rid of everything and not leaving anything behind. And again, no guarantees. It may not work. And the key is absolutely bone dry before you apply electricity to it. Wait days. Don't be impatient. Don't be in a hurry. I think I waited 3 days before I used my cell phone again after I let it dry out. It worked. It's kind of remarkable. Eric, Toluca Lake, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Eric.
I have a question with respect to Windows XP and then the users underneath that when you switch users. And if you're using like Adaware or a disk cleanup or virus software, mm-hmm. does that hit both sides of that? Or are they...
run it as administrator.
Are there switches for that?
You probably are administrator because unfortunately with XP, most people don't run as a limited user. But if you run as administrator, it does have access to everything.
So it should scrape off everything on both halves of that.
However, I have to say, it's been my experience that you can clean up one account and boot into another account, and all of a sudden the adware comes back. Adware nowadays is so nasty, so intrusive, and they are, frankly, so clever about burying it I think increasingly it's difficult to remove it at all.
Really?
That often the only solution is to reformat the drive and reinstall. And what I would do is disinfect as best you can. But if it does keep resurfacing, then try disinfecting from within each account. And if it continues to come back, then you've got to format and reinstall. You know, the old mantra in security is once a system has been compromised, there is no fix. Because you don't know to what degree the compromise goes. If it's a rootkit, they have control of your system. The system could report itself completely healthy. Can you trust that? No, because they have control of the system. The only choice is to nuke it, to erase the hard drive and reformat and install again with a known clean system. That's what's so bad about this stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio at 1229. It is, let me just look.
Courtney Kramer.
Courtney Kramer, there she is in the KFI News Center.
Brutally honest, John and Ken. Tomorrow, 3 to 7.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Yeah, 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. Carolyn Ventura, you're next on KFI.
Hello, Leo.
Hi, Carol.
Hey. I want to download radio programs, probably about 3 hours worth, when I want to listen to them.
Right.
And I do not have internet.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, I don't know anything about
it. You don't have internet?
No.
Yeah, now you just complicated it considerably. So you want internet radio, but you don't want internet.
Right. I do.
This is a challenge.
Really?
Well, I'm not sure. How would you? You have to get internet access to get internet radio.
I go to the library.
I see. So you want to go to the library and do it, and then you could listen later.
Yeah.
Devices. You know. You could do it on your cell phone. It would cost you a lot of money, but for instance, a lot of podcasts are now available by listening on the cell phone. You pay minutes for it, which means it could be quite costly.
Okay.
What is it that you want to listen to?
Talk radio.
Okay.
Or
so for instance, let's say you wanted to listen to KFI.
Yeah, sure.
There are podcasts, KFI podcasts, that you could download, and you could go to the library. Download if your library allows you. Many libraries won't allow you to download files and put them on something.
Okay.
But if your library allowed you to do that, you could do that. You go out and buy an MP3 player, and you could hook it up to your library computer and download it. Now that would only be whatever they've posted as podcasts. This show, you can listen to the whole show as a podcast, but the handle I think only does an hour. I'm not sure how much of the show Bill does. So let's say you want to listen to the whole show. We do stream it on the internet. So you could go to the library. You'd have to go at the time the show is on. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, it'd be easier just to listen on the radio. You'd have to go at the time the show was on and download it then. And again, the library would have to allow you to capture this stuff and put it on a device. So, I mean, I don't know if there's any advantage to doing that over listening to it on the radio. If you want to listen to something in the UK that you can't listen to on the radio, you could do that. But you'd have to be there during the live stream unless they offered a downloadable version. Now, the good news is a lot of stations are starting to offer downloadable versions.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically a podcast. So if that's the case, then it would simply, you go to the library, you go to the website, you see if they have a downloadable version of it, not a streaming version. That's the difference. Streaming is listening live.
Mm-hmm.
Downloadable or a podcast is listening after the fact. If they do, then you could download it. Do you have an MP3 player or any kind of device?
No.
All right. So,
I would
check with the library before you spend any money.
Okay.
Because what you'll have to do, in effect, is go to the library, download these files, plug in your MP3 player, and copy them over to your MP3 player. And I don't know if it's common that libraries allow you to do that.
Okay. How much memory would I need on an MP3 for at least 3 hours of programs?
Not much.
Really?
Not much. I mean, 128K would be megs would be plenty for 3 hours. That's more like 100 hours.
So, really?
Yeah. What? I mean, you've got plenty of room. It's not a matter of room. It's a matter of just being able to do it.
Okay. I might get my own internet.
If you have it, I mean, that's a compelling reason to get internet access, frankly, is that kind of thing. You know, I mean, you can listen to almost all of our shows. Now, our programmer director just called and said that all of our shows are offered as podcasts. What I don't know, and since she's not on the phone, I can't find out. I'll have to check, is if the full show is, or for a while we were only doing parts of the shows, but now I guess you can listen to all of it.
Full shows.
The whole show, that's great. So if you go to, that's fantastic. So here's an example for you. You go to KFIAM640.com, and you enter in the keyword podcast, right there up at the top, and you can see all of the shows, and they're available for download. You can listen to them streaming, too. So what you would probably want to do is click the download button, download that show to the library's hard drive, and then if you had a good one would be the iRiver. That'd probably be the one I'd recommend, IRIVER. Buy an iRiver. Again, it would require that the library allow you to plug that thing in, and you can just copy those files over, and you could listen. I think that's great. Yeah, look, all this is fantastic. You get the whole show. That's really fantastic. So, you know, I mean, this is, I think it's very forward-looking of KFI to do this, actually. But I think our experience has been, it doesn't hurt the radio shows. The live people listen live when they can, and the ability to listen after the fact is great. So if you're a John and Ken fan, you just go to KFIAM640.com, you enter podcast as the keyword, and then you click that download button. You can download those to the hard drive and then put them on an MP3 player. That's a great idea. Norman in North Hollywood, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Norman.
Yes, I have a question about antiviruses. And the reason I have the question is I have an older computer. One of my computers is older. And I had a problem with NOD 32. I bought it in February, and it worked good until August, and all of a sudden it quit working. And when I called the technical support people at ESAT, they said, or I emailed them, they said, well, I didn't have enough memory.
Oh.
And because
how much memory do you
older,
have?
I can't put any more memory in it because the memory is no longer available for the computer.
So what version of Windows are you running? And how much memory do you have in the system?
It only has 64 meg.
Which is
a minimum for Windows 32 or 2000.
Yeah.
But my question is, I have DSL Extreme, and they have an antivirus utility that's provided with it. Plus the fact I use their email reader to like preview all my emails.
I think you're fine.
So I don't think I really need to have that.
No,
that.
No, I think you're fine. And really, the truth, just between us kids, the truth is the more important thing is to change your behavior than to have a good antivirus. If you behave properly, you're not going to get a bug.
Well, see, first of all, I don't accept email from people I don't know.
Well,
so that's
okay.
One reason
remember,
I screen it with the, you know, the thing with DSL Extreme.
But remember, viruses will often come to you from people you know.
Well, I understand that, but I don't download things.
Let me tell you what the behaviors are. Number one, don't open email attachments. Doesn't matter who it came from. The way a virus works is it goes through somebody's email address book. You know, let's say Buddy X gets a virus. It goes through Buddy X's email address book and it mails it to all of you from Buddy X. Hey, Buddy X sent me a picture of Anna Kournikova. How cool. And you open it. Nah, meh, you're dead. So rule number one is it's not about who it came from. It's not about anything. It's an attachment. Do not open email attachments, period. Rule number two is do not click links in email. That's how you get phished or get taken to a evil website that will put something bad in your system. Rule three is, and this is a problem, you have Windows 2000. You've got to keep your operating system absolutely up to date. The reason is there's two kinds of bad guys that get into your system. One, because of something you did. And one, because of something you didn't do. So, you know, it's easy to get written to, you know, to change your behavior so that the things you do to get a virus, like opening attachments or downloading music from the internet and playing it or downloading, you know, pirated programs, that's how people get viruses. Bringing in a program from the internet and running it on your system. You should never do it. That's why those peer-to-peer file sharing systems are dangerous. That you're going to get spyware and viruses that way. It's going to look like a music song file. It's not. You're going to run it. You're going to get infected. So that's problem one. Problem two is lack of action on your part. Because there are so many flaws in Windows, so many bugs, so many holes, all the time they're being discovered. And as they're discovered, hackers immediately jump on it. There's actually, you can buy, if you are a bad guy, I think it's 50 euros, 60 euros. It's a company in Russia sells it. A kit that you put on your website. And it's updated all the time with new ways to exploit people. You put this on your website. You make a website that's, you know, got something that people want to see. People go to that website. And if their Windows isn't patched, the bug comes in through that website. Regardless of what antivirus, anti-spyware, whatever else you're doing. It's no action on your part. It's inaction on your part because you didn't update your system. So you've got to patch and fix those bugs the minute the patches are offered. You shouldn't be using Internet Explorer, by the way. That's the number one vector for this stuff. Firefox, because it's dumber, is less likely to get burned by these evil sites. Most of the exploits in this kit are for Internet Explorer. So don't use Internet Explorer. Use Firefox. Update your system regularly. Do not open attachments. Do not click links in email. Do not download files from the internet, like music and programs, unless you're absolutely 100% sure that they're safe. And I would submit that's a pretty hard thing to know. You do all those, you don't need an antivirus because you're not doing anything that could get you a virus. I think it's still a good idea. I think it's still prudent. The one DSL Extreme offers is fine. There are plenty of online antiviruses. Go to housecall.antivirus.com and it'll scan your system. I think a regular scan is important in case something does sneak through. But in general, behavior is the most important thing. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 1249.
Wake up and smell the information. Handle on the news 6 to 7 every morning.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. On KFI, 1-800-520-1KFI is my number. I'll be here till 2 o'clock this afternoon. And Dr. Dean talks about your body, the way I talk about your technology. Back to the phones we go. And Henry in Huntington Beach. Hello, Henry. Welcome to KFI.
Thank you. I'm interested in buying a new computer, desktop, mainly digital darkroom work.
Okay.
Want to know if you had any suggestions.
Have you made the critical Mac versus Windows decision?
Well, I started out with Mac, and I've had Windows for about the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So all my current programs are in Windows. Okay. So I kind of like to stick to Windows.
You don't
want to
buy
I'm
all
not...
new software. Now,
exactly.
I have to tell you, a new Mac, you can run Windows very nicely. I was talking about this at the beginning of the show with Parallels. In fact, that's what I've been doing, and it's fantastic. But you're right. You use Photoshop primarily?
Yes.
Yeah, although I would have to say, you know, programs like Aperture on the Mac are starting to make it a very attractive choice for this kind of digital darkroom stuff. Do you use Lightroom?
No, I haven't.
Okay, that's Adobe's new kind of workflow program. It's kind of like Aperture. I'd take a look at Aperture. Just go online and go to apple.com/aperture.
Okay.
It's an amazing program in terms of workflow, keeping track of what you've shot, modifying it. It's just an incredible program. And a compelling reason, I think, to go Mac. But let's say you're going to go Windows.
Another quick thing. I'm an engineer at Boeing, and Boeing is strictly Windows. So if I have to take work home, it's a little more convenient to stay with. Yeah.
Yeah, that solves that. There's no. Yeah, if you have to use Windows software, it's probably better to buy a Windows machine. So you're going to, you know, be looking at a Core 2 almost certainly. Almost right. All the new PCs are Core 2, and you're going to love it. What kind of questions do you have? I mean, what is it that you're?
Well, I want to spend about $1,000, you know, plus or minus a little bit.
Okay. Desktop.
Yes.
Yeah. No question. You're about a laptop. You're going desktop.
Correct.
Okay.
Just any thing.
I'm a Dell fan. I mean, I just bought two new computers from Dell. I'm Dell is now. I should say as a disclaimer, they're an advertiser on my podcast network. But the reason they're an advertiser is because I was a Dell fan from way back. I think they offer the best bang for your buck. If you don't mind buying mail order, I mean, if you want to see it, that's another matter.
No, and again, if I'm an engineer at Boeing, we have a deal with Dell, 16% off any Dell product.
That solves that.
Yeah.
High-end Dells, the XPS models, I think, are a little bit better, although your price, you know, are you just buying a CPU, or are you going to get a new monitor as well?
I was thinking a new monitor, like a 19-inch, at least 19-inch flat panel.
Yeah, you can do it, but you're pushing at $1,000, you're pushing. I mean, for the XPS 410, for instance, starts at $1,000.
Okay.
But you know, when you start at $1,000, you make some sacrifices. If you could go a little higher, I would look at doing that. But let me just let's look at what you get for $1,000. You get a Core 2 processor running a little slower. It's the 1.88. I'd like to see you go up to the 2 gigahertz Core 2, but that's all right. You get Media Center Edition, which I don't think you care about. You can downgrade that to XP Professional.
Mm-hmm.
You get a pretty good GeForce 7300 video card, and I think that's more than adequate for what you want to do. You get a gig of RAM. You get a 250 gig hard drive and a 19-inch flat panel. That's $1,000. Now, you got a 16% discount. So now you could perhaps upgrade to a little faster processor on that. Yeah, I don't think you need a DVD burner. You could probably just get away with a CD burner and a DVD player. It's nice to have the DVD player.
Yeah.
And you've got all the software. You know what? You're right in there. That's the XPS 410.
Okay.
I think that's a pretty nice system. And since you got the discount from Dell, go for it. Leo Laporte, well, that's nice. That solves that problem. There are plenty of other good brands, but and I think even HP is improving their quality quite a bit. For a while, I really didn't recommend them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 1259. Courtney Kramer is in the KFI News Center.
December 3rd, 2006.
Right now, 77 in Lake Forest, 73 in Huntington Beach, 68 in Arcadia, 67 in Diamond Bar. KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 106, I'm Courtney Kramer, KFI News.
Thank you, Courtney. 106. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, 1-800-520-1KFI. That's my phone number. Love to hear from you. 1-800-520-1534. Let's continue on to Steve in Detroit. Welcome to KFI.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Steve. I'm well. How are you?
I am doing okay. Long time listener and watcher. I listen to not all your podcasts, but some of them, like Inside and Tech. Well, you know, I'm a big fan. I have a really frustrating problem ever since I got the computer my sister bought at work, and it's been frustrating me every time I go to any web page, except for a few web pages, would they have ad support? every time I go to a web page, I don't see the surrounding ads. Would you see it like the ad banner, which you see on top and bottom? And every time I click on something that is ad supported, like something from Yahoo, when you click on their news section for their news video, I don't see nothing. Every time it's keep blowing and it goes blank and all that. And I was just wondering, because it was a business computer before I got it for my blog site. Yeah. I was just wondering, is there something like...
There's probably
like
a blocker on there somewhere.
In Internet Explorer.
You're not seeing... Tell me what you're not seeing. Not seeing video?
Yeah, I'm not seeing video. Every
so if
time
you go to somewhere like YouTube, do you see the video there?
I do see the video on YouTube.
Okay, that means Flash is working. So when you don't see the video, what kind of video? Do you know what kind of video it is that you're not seeing?
Yeah, mostly from Yahoo Video. Every time I go to, like, to a news story, like I'm clicking on now, hold on.
Oh, it's the news stories on Yahoo.
The news story on Yahoo, every time I click on and I don't see nothing, it said done, it's nothing, because I presume most of them are ad-supported.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I'm trying to think what Yahoo Video is using it. I'm just looking at it, it looks like
Not Yahoo Video, but the regular news section when you go...
Yeah, that's almost undoubtedly Windows Media Player. So it's possible that it was blocked by the IT guys, but most likely you just need to update Windows Media Player. I would go. I would run Windows Update. The new version 11 is now available through Windows Update, and install that. And the chances are that'll fix it. By the way, I don't recommend using Internet Explorer if you can help it, because as I mentioned earlier, that's a good way to get spyware. I'm thinking though that it's just an installation issue. If there is security software running on there, Norton Internet Security or something like that, you might want to take a look at that as well. But it is possible that it's absolutely possible that the IT department went in there and they blocked certain kinds of content, whether doing it through the Windows firewall. You should check those settings, make sure they're set to the default settings, or an additional piece of software put on there. So you might want to kind of go through the system and take a look. Stan in Valencia, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Hi.
Hey, Stan.
Hey, over the last 20 years, I've had occasion to rehabilitate 3 beverage-challenged keyboards.
All right. What beverages...
Well, let's see. 2 soft drinks and a very heavily creamed and sugared coffee.
Ooh, that's the one that scares me the most.
Well, see, sugar is only marginally soluble in alcohol. Your guy Les is absolutely right.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's a 2-stage process. You start with distilled water.
All right.
Okay, I literally flood the keyboard with distilled water. Then get a spray bottle.
Yep.
So you can get a real forceful stream in there and really aggressively squirt into all the, the crooks and nannies.
So set the spray not to a mist, but to that stream and
To the stream.
It.
So you can really get the distilled water everywhere and really rinse the living daylights out of it.
And I'll just reiterate, we're doing this when the keyboard is not connected to the computer. Very important.
Well, and unless you want to have visions, that's true.
You might even want to move it well away from any electrical equipment. It sounds like this is going to be a wet mess. Okay.
Now, the second step has to do with 91% rubbing alcohol. Not the regular stuff, not the 70%. Alcohol is hygroscopic in that it sucks up water. It'll suck it up out of the air.
Right.
But at 70%, it sucked up all the water it's going to suck up.
Okay.
So you go to the drugstore and you get the 91% rubbing
alcohol.
Now,
I'm a little concerned when you say rubbing alcohol, because that has glycerin in it.
No, not so. Pure isopropanol. Isopropyl alcohol.
I want to say that very clearly. It is not rubbing alcohol, because rubbing alcohol has glycerin in it. You want denatured alcohol.
Well, what you want is pure
alcohol.
Isopropyl alcohol,
right.
91%.
Right. If it says rubbing alcohol on the label, it has glycerin in it. So that's really important.
So,
you don't want to put more stuff in the keyboard. So you're getting pure alcohol, and you say 90% is fine.
Well, 91% is what you can get at the drugstore.
Okay.
Now, you do the same thing you did with the distilled water. You flood the dickens out of it, and then you put it in a spray bottle, and you put it on stream, and you squirt the heck out of it.
Now, we're getting the water out by doing that.
That's what the 91% is for. It sucks up all the water.
Okay.
You're not done, though.
Oh, no.
Now, you take your hair dryer, you set it on cool or cold, no heat.
Not
you blow
hot.
It out.
Okay.
Lastly, you hang it up outdoors, opened up, out of the sun, in the breeze for 2 or 3 days.
And outdoors is important just because you want to really have it be dry out there.
Yeah, you want the wind blowing through it, as it were.
Great advice, and you do not, and that's important. Do not use it until it is bone dry. 3 days,
2 or 3 days outside.
What's your recovery percentage on those 3 boards?
All 3 came back.
Awesome. I can't believe coffee with...
It's only been 3 in 20 years that all three came back.
Coffee with cream and sugar, that's bad, boy.
Well, that was the first one, and that's where I discovered I needed to have a squirt bottle to get real aggressive with it. The cream was real sticky.
Oh, it'll get, and you want to do that quick before the cream goes bad. I tell you, every radio station engineer I know has experience with this, not necessarily in keyboards, but with soundboards. Because I'll tell you, you can ban all the food and drink you want from the control room. You will never keep it out. And true. I can't tell you how many times I've seen a cup of coffee spilled into a audio board. And, oh, that's a mess. Oh, is that a mess? Hey, I really appreciate it. The voice of experience, Stan.
Hey, shalom, shalom to you.
Take care, and thanks so much. 3 out of 3 he did. So that's key. So distilled water, again, you want pure stuff because you don't want to introduce any more contaminants. Distilled water, wash it out. Isopropyl alcohol, denatured alcohol, not rubbing alcohol, 91%. Wash it out again, hang it up to dry, and don't use it until it is absolutely dry. Now, I have to say, this will work on almost any electronics. Be careful with things that have capacitors. Obviously, you can't do this on a power supply or a monitor, but you probably wouldn't need to. A desktop keyboard, these things are inexpensive, $5-$10. So I'm not sure I'd spend a whole lot of time fixing a desktop keyboard, unless it's one of those fancy ones. You know, they spend a couple $100 on the buckling springs and all that stuff. But a laptop keyboard, I can see why you'd want to do that. That's an expensive thing to replace. Kurt, Portland, Oregon, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Kurt.
Hey, Leo. Hey, my question is about Ubuntu and networking that to a Windows machine.
Okay.
I seem to be able to browse folders in the shared folders on the... from the Ubuntu machine on the Windows machine.
Yeah, but not the other way around.
Not the other way around.
Yeah.
It asked me for a password. At one time, it used to ask me for a password. Now the OK button on the password login is grayed out.
So it's probable that you have security software running on your Windows machine that's blocking the incoming request. Turn off the Windows firewall. Any other security software, Norton Internet Security, whatever, that stuff will block incoming requests. And that's what it is, right? It's coming from Linux to Windows. It's an incoming request. That's why it'll work outbound. That's kind of how firewalls work, is they're like a valve. Outbound traffic's allowed, inbound traffic's blocked. So you can always tell when you're having a connection problem. You always want to... The problem exists... at the machine accepting that needs to accept an inbound connection, in this case, the Windows machine. So I would just look at security software on the Windows machine blocking those key ports, port 135, 139.
Now, would Norton's internet or Norton's antivirus function that way?
Not the antivirus, but the Norton Internet Security, which has a firewall, it would absolutely...
Yeah, I'm not using any firewall.
Okay, all right. Well, take a look at the Windows firewall. That's on by default. Once you install Service Pack 2.
Yeah, I turned that off too.
Okay. Here's another test then. Test whether you can ping the Windows machine from the Linux machine. You know, open a terminal and type.
Oh, I can get on the Windows machine from the Linux machine. I just can't get on the Linux machine from the Windows machine.
Okay. Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. It's going
the I can browse the shared.
So you're sitting in Ubuntu Windows. And you can see the Windows box. It's just when you're in Windows, you can't see the Ubuntu box.
I can see this. I can see the server from the Windows machine. I just can't get on it.
Well,
even when I type my Ubuntu password in, it tells me I don't have the permissions to get on that. And I've tried setting the permissions, or at least I'm not a Linux guru. I'm polished in Windows, but not in Linux.
Well, I mean, I can't spend the half hour it would take to diagnose this, but so now it sounds like it's the other way around. It's that Linux is preventing Windows from coming in.
Which probably makes it more secure than Windows.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what to try next. I mean, there are many, many things that could be the problem. So. What I would recommend is an Ubuntu, I'll find it for you, put a link in the show notes. There's an Ubuntu how-to on networking with Windows. And I would go through that step by step and make sure you've done everything it recommends. Linux works very well with Windows because it has a program called Samba in it, which emulates Windows networking. Basically, it's Windows World. We all live in it. You know, we just all have to survive in it. So the Windows networking standard is the standard that everybody else has to use, Macintosh, Linux, and so forth. Samba, which is on Mac and on Linux, is the open source program that allows you to look like a Windows machine to Windows. You have it. You're running it. But there's some setting somewhere that's preventing Windows from seeing or logging into your machine. I think it's just a minor little setting. I'll find the how-to, and you can walk through the steps and see. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 117.
Just because it's the weekend doesn't mean you got to get stupid.
More stimulating weekends.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI at 122. Here till 2 o'clock, Dr. Dean Adell is coming up. Did a little research and I found a good article on getting Samba working on Linux appropriately so you can do exactly what our last caller wanted to do, network the two, Windows and Linux. I have to say, usually it just works out of the box, but if there are issues, it can be tough to find exactly what's going on. So there's an article, a good article on reallylinux.com that explains step by step what you need to do and where problems could arise. So I'll put that link in the show notes. Show notes are online. If you just go to KFIAM640.com and click my name under shows, then click the official website link on my page on KFI's site. That'll take you to leo.am. This is Sunday's show 306. Wow, 306. And Shuby's keeping the notes in there, putting links in. And we also have the comment box turned on. So if you have some thoughts, we can you can add them there. That, and as I said earlier, that's really to me, the future of broadcasting is a conversation. That's why I love talk radio. It's not just some guy laying it on you. It's a conversation back and forth. And adding the web element makes it even more so. I mean, we've got a chat room going on right now, 126 people in there talking back and forth. We've got a website where you can go, you can follow links to things I talk about, but you can also post your own comments there. To me, that's really when it starts becoming valuable. Because no one person knows the answer to all these questions. I certainly don't. But between us, I think there's pretty much nothing we can't do. Is that the double negative? Vince in Burbank, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome.
Hey, Leo. Hey, Vince. I've got a question, problem that I thought should be a simple problem, but it really isn't so far.
Okay.
I want to use my computer, whether with a modem or a strictly internet-based system, I don't care, but I want to use my computer to call into my existing cell phone voicemail and download my existing messages and save them as WAV or MP3 files or whatever, and I'm having a really tough time finding that.
The recording is simple. I mean, if you can hear the cell phone on your computer, you know, coming through your computer speakers, you can record it. So I'm going to leave the recording part out. That's just kind of a given. As soon as you can hear it coming through your speakers, you can record it. The issue is, how do you call your cell phone from your computer?
Exactly.
And hear the audio. You know, if you use your modem, most of the time the modem is not interested in audio. It's interested in turning the audio into data. As soon as it's got a link with an ISP, it shuts off. So what you need is a special kind of modem called a voice modem that is designed specifically for voice. In fact, people used these for a long time. For voicemail systems, you can actually buy software with a voice modem that will do a whole voicemail system on your computer. It's great for a small business, that kind of thing, very flexible.
Well, when I go to shop for a voice modem, all I find is data fax modems with a voicemail pass-through, and I'm assuming that that's just saying that goes onto my regular phone, and it still doesn't have the voice quality.
Yeah, you know, what's happened is, of course, the modem market is dead.
Right.
Nobody's buying modems anymore.
That's why I'm thinking maybe the internet. Yeah.
It's unfortunate, but that's the fact. And U.S. Robotics and Zytel are the last two companies that still make voice modems. The Zytel is good, but it's very expensive. Xytel. And it'll do exactly what you want. In fact, they're the last man standing in this market, alas. But I don't know if you want to spend the money. And usually, by the way, they're external, not internal. You can get internals, we're talking several hundred dollars for a product that really, if you don't want that voice capability, costs $20. Yeah, that's the sad.
Yeah, that's why it used to be a big deal. Oh, voice modem on your computer.
Right.
Now nobody even sells them. Yeah.
Right. They don't sell them. They do soft, basically soft modems where the processor's doing all the work, if they sell them at all. I was so surprised. I just got a laptop. It actually had a modem in it. I thought, wow. how quaint.
Yeah.
So what would you really want, and I think this is where we're going to move, is a service that records your voicemails and mails them to you or makes them accessible on the web. And there are a lot of those. Now, for your cell service, that's not going to work. But what I do is I use a company called GotVmail, GotVmail. I pay a small monthly service fee, and then I just forward everything to them. In fact, they have a follow me service. So what I do with GotVmail, I have an 800 number, and I just give everybody my 800 number. You call that, and what you're actually doing is calling GotVmail, and then I give them the choice. I say, you can try to track me down, and if you do, press 1, and it will call all my numbers, one after the other, including my cell phone. Or, if you just want to leave a message, press 0. What happens is it's recorded on their servers, and then, believe it or not, it's very cool, it's emailed to me. Or I can go on the web and do it as well. So that's very, very handy.
Well, I've got, I did subscribe to Private Phone, I think it's called, and they've got, you know, several levels of service, and they do, you know, I can save my messages or whatever. I'm trying to, the only problem that doesn't solve is trying to get the messages that I've been saving for months on my cell phone.
Yeah, that's another issue. You know, you might see if your cell phone can forward messages. You might be
only to another Verizon.
Verizon. Yeah, thank you, Verizon.
Truthfully,
it's the kind of thing I would really like the cell phone company to do. You know? Why don't they do it?
I'm paying another few bucks a month to be able to download my messages.
Oh, hell, I would do it too. I mean, that to me, the fact that they don't is crazy.
I know. It's bizarre. Verizon actually charges something like $25 to download one message and send it to you on a disk.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's a third-party service that they send you to.
Goodness.
It's ridiculous.
Well, if anybody knows a good way to get that audio off, I mean, I would just hold the phone up to a microphone and record it that
way. Yeah, I've done that.
Is this a long-term thing, or you just have a few voicemails you want to get?
I just got maybe, I don't know, 10 I want to get and be able to do it occasionally. But
Another company that does this voicemail mailbox thing that's brand new and is currently free because they're trying to get some business as they're in beta still is GrandCentral.com. I'm familiar with them as well, Grand Central. I like GotVmail. I think it's worth it. Anybody have a good idea for getting your Verizon voicemails? I wouldn't recommend buying a voice modem just for that. Give us a ring, 800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. At 129, it's Courtney Kramer in the KFI News Center.
KFI Weekends, the stimulating talk you want.
And the Southern California news you need.
KFI AM 640.
138. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Oh, I should have known better. You know, I got sidetracked by the idea from our last call. We were talking with Vince, who wanted to pull voicemail messages off his cell phone. And, you know, sometimes this will happen. I'll listen to what the question is, and I'll go off off on a tangent. He started talking about voice modems, and so that's what I started thinking about. But really, there are much easier ways to do this, which I should have immediately come up with. But fortunately, we've got great people in the chat room and on the website who reminded me there are a couple of ways to do this. First of all, you can go to a Radio Shack and buy a little unit that lets you record your cell phone. Just plugs into your cell phone and get the audio off your cell phone. And you could record it with a cassette recorder. You could plug it into the sound card and record it that way. It's probably $12. But you can also do this in software with Skype. And that makes sense, too. Skype is another fantastic program. I said at the beginning of the show that Parallels might be the program of the year. Skype might be the program of the year, too. Very important. This is a voice over internet program, absolutely free. Allows you to make phone calls from computer to computer, video as well as audio. But here's the cool thing. You can also use Skype out. And right now it's free till the end of the month anywhere in North America to call any phone. So what you do is you use Skype to call your cell phone, just as you would from any phone to get your messages. You press, you know, the password and retrieve your messages. Now you are hearing it through your computer. So now it's trivial to record it. So this is an absolutely free and simple and easy way you could do right now, Vince. Just skype.com, download Skype, use Skype to call your cell phone, play back your messages, and record that. Oh, I don't know why I didn't think of that. But I do thank Firebird for the recommendation on the Radio Shack adapter in the chat room. And I can't remember who first mentioned Skype, but most of the chat room was smart enough to think of that well before I thought of it. Bob in Los Angeles, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
But of course.
Want to know the best way to go wireless for DSL.
Well, it's just like any other kind of wireless networking. All you really have to do is get a wireless router. So now some DSL companies will offer you this, and I don't recommend it. You know, they'll say, well, when you get your DSL, just like cable, high-speed internet, comes through a modem. The modem is plugged into the wall. In the case of DSL, it's plugged into your phone jack. In the case of a cable modem, it's plugged into your cable connection. But at that point, coming out of the back of the modem is an Ethernet connector, and that's what goes into your network. Now, you could do it wired, just plug it into your computer, but most people nowadays will go out and buy a wireless router. Linksys makes them, D-Link, Netgear. My current favorite's D-Link, D-L-I-N-K. But they're all good. And you just plug that Ethernet jack that's coming out of the modem, the DSL modem, into your D-Link wireless router. Now, you have to have wireless capability in your computers. Do you have that already?
No.
All right. Are they laptops or desktops?
It's a desktop.
All right. So when
I'm running Windows 98 Second Edition.
That won't be a problem, I don't think. But what you're going to do is you're going to buy the wireless access point, or WAP. That'll be around $50 or $60. And then you're going to get USB wireless Wi-Fi adapters for each computer. That's basically a little antenna, a little transceiver. And I like USB because you don't have to open the case or anything. You just plug it in. Now, Windows 98 SE was the first Windows to have support for USB. So I would make sure when you buy those devices that you check on the box and make sure it works with Windows 98. Because some of them may not. They may expect XP. So look on the box and make sure Windows 98 is supported. So you'll plug that into your desktop. You'll plug in your wireless access point. Now, you're going to want to follow the instructions that come with the access point in terms of security. You're going to want to turn on something called WPA. Not the Works Progress Administration. It stands for Wireless Protected Access, WPA. There are other forms of encryption, but that's the one that's secure. You turn that on your base station. It'll say, okay, what password do you want to use? You enter in a password. And then when you first use the wireless device on your desktop, it's going to say, all right, well, let me look and see if I see anything. It'll see your access point. Say, I see this access point. And then you say, yeah, join that one. Because you have to choose. You may, in fact, see more than yours. Your neighbors may have it. So you may see many of them. Choose yours. And then if you've turned on WPA on your base station, your desktop will say, oh, it needs a password. You enter that password. You only have to do that once. It remembers it from then on. And now you're connected. The range is about 150 feet. If you want more range, if you want to go more than, say, 100 to 150 feet, then I would suggest there are two different standards that are common now. They're both 802.11. That's the number. But there's 802.11b, there's A, there's G, and there's N. B is the most common. That's what you'll get in Wi-Fi hotspots and everything, but it's also the oldest. G is what you'll probably be buying, and you'll probably buy one that's B/G or B and G compatible. They're basically compatible. Forget A. It's a different frequency. If you're buying all new now, and range is important, more than 100 feet, let's say, I recommend buying N, 802.11n. And I recommend buying the Belkin. The name brand names I mentioned earlier were for A, B, or G routers. But when you talk about N routers, there's really only two companies I recommend. That's Belkin and Linksys. And Belkin's the best. So you want the Belkin Draft N router. It's faster and it goes for a greater distance. Most people will not need it because it is more expensive. But if range is important to you, then that's what I'd recommend. The Belkin Draft N. Alan, Huntington Beach, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Alan. Hey, Alan.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello?
Welcome. You're on. Welcome.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Welcome.
The problem that we have is we have three computers hooked up to a LAN.
Okay.
And we like to play these online games, right? But when my daughter gets on her MySpace account, when she starts scrolling, it just ruins the ping. Sometimes it's so bad that it kicks us off the game. And needless to say, this causes a big argument.
Yeah, I've never heard of that problem. I didn't realize MySpace. But of course, if you look at a MySpace page and all of the images, you know, especially in the comments, everybody's got to put their big image in there, right? That's probably what's slowing you down, is that page probably is pretty hefty.
So, I know on Firefox you can go in the about config and change the way that the pages load or something like that. You can
I mean, one thing you could do, your daughter ain't going to like it. One thing you could do is turn off images. And I suspect that will speed things up quite a bit. The only reason that this would slow it down is because she's... Oh, and I know another thing to turn off is that music player. Actually, that might be it. If she goes to pages that have... I forget. The teenagers all do this. They put their favorite song on the page on their MySpace page, and it starts playing immediately.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah, and that's... You know, why is it slowing your gaming down? Well, probably because it's drawing a lot of data from MySpace. So what you want to do is turn off any features that are going to draw a lot of data. That would be images, and almost undoubtedly that's streaming music is what's killing it. In fact, you could try as an experiment. You could say, hey, honey, could you press the pause button on that music and see if that fixes it?
It only seems to happen, though, when she's scrolling. That's what I can't understand. I always thought when you go to a page, it loads all the page.
It does. Scrolling would really only impact her own system.
But no, when she starts scrolling, that's when the ping goes down on us, and it really causes a lot of problems. I wish there was a way I could isolate her computer so it just has so much bandwidth, but I can't.
Yeah, you can, but it's complicated. You have to put a proxy server in and so forth. I would say try turning off those features in her browser, turning off images, turning off Flash, turning off scripting. She's not going to like it because MySpace is going to look awful without all that stuff. I think it looks awful with all that stuff, but she's going to want to see all those images.
Okay. And I also saw this one in about config. It was something about simultaneous connections.
Yeah, it could be.
I mean, if you just put it down to one connection, will that help?
That might help.
All?
That's a good idea. I think, frankly, it's the streaming music. Now, that wouldn't explain why scrolling would have anything to do with it. I can't think of a reason why scrolling would have anything to do with it, frankly.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. I've researched this until I don't have time to really...
I would just say, if you're really curious about what's doing it, is to slowly turn off features one by one. You know, turn off images. Yeah, try only one stream at a time. The thing is, if she's sucking a lot of bandwidth, that's impacting your gaming. I could just hear the fights in this house. You're on MySpace. I just got killed because of you. Well, I'm trying to listen to the music. I'm not sure what to say. It sounds like more frankly like a family problem more than a computer problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Making common sense more common. John and Ken, tomorrow 3 to 7.
KFI AM 640.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. For just a few more minutes, and it's Dr. Dean. You can catch more of me all week long, though, on my podcast network. 16 podcasts and counting. Number 17 about to launch at, I'm crazy, twit.tv, TWIT.tv is the site. The KFI podcast is there, but it's also on KFI AM 640. com. You can listen to my show. I didn't realize they do all 3 hours of my show now, Saturday and Sunday. If you go to KFIAM640.com and use the keyword podcast, I love podcasts. It's really amazing. Tonight we do our live podcast. We just started doing that, Amber MacArthur and I, Net at Night, it's called. We do that at 6 o'clock Pacific on TalkShoe.com. And Kevin Rose will be our guest tonight, the $60 million man from Digg. Let's go to San Diego for our next caller. Welcome to KFI. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Leo. Steve Kurtzman.
Hey, Steve.
Two quickies. The recording the voicemails can be done with a Palm Trio. For anybody that has a Palm Trio, you can use CallRec. My question was...
Oh, that's neat. Of course it can, if you have a Trio as your cell phone. Yeah. Oh, that makes sense.
My question originally was... our ISP at work at the office has had a meltdown this week due to all the emails. They can't process them fast enough with all the spam. Isn't there a new standard coming out that they're working on to? I was wondering if you knew what the status of that was.
We talked a little bit about that on the Security Now podcast this week on Thursday. There are, unfortunately, there were competing standards. Both of them, one from Microsoft, one from an industry consortium, deal with the idea of authentication. The theory being, if you force somebody to authenticate this itself as a sender before accepting their email, in other words, to prove this is really email coming from this person, it'll eliminate spam because spammers rely on anonymity. It's illegal to send spam. So if you have an authenticated spammer, you can go after them. So that's the theory. Hotmail does it. A number of sites, I think Yahoo is supporting it. But the problem is there were two standards and there's no agreement. If it had been accepted and widely put in widespread use, I think it would have been effective. Right now, though, the only good anti-spam techniques are using filtering. I'm sorry to say.
That's getting so bad I can't even get my emails from my clients because they can't process them fast enough.
Can I recommend a company? That's the one I use. I love them. MailRoute.net. For businesses, they don't have a consumer product, but they do have a product for business. The way it works, all your mail goes through MailRoute. They get rid of the spam, and they're very effective. I've never had any false positives. That is, they've never blocked any important mail from me.
Okay. And ours has been effective. It just they can't process it fast enough.
Well,
so
you need a better
overloaded.
One.
Yeah. Thanks.
MailRoute's a very... www.mailroute.net. I've been very... You know, I get, as I have said several times, over a million spam messages a month. Just me. Just by myself. And
Only less than 1% of them are actually good.
That's
emails.
Right. That's right. Far fewer than 1% of my mail is good. And MailRoute stops it, and it's great. Otherwise, I would be downloading that million messages and filtering them locally. I don't want to do that. You can't do that locally.
Need a bigger hard drive.
Yeah, a much bigger hard drive and a lot faster processor. So that's the key to server-side filtering. I think it's the only way to go. And you need, frankly, I don't think your internet service provider is the one to do it. I think it needs somebody who's a specialist in this. Another company that does it is Bright Mail. There are a few of these. They're very good.
Okay.
Good luck. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate the call. And I thank you all for listening. Dr. Dean is coming up next, but I'll be back next Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. We can do this all over again, talk about tech. I just love doing it, and I'm so glad you were here. Remember, my podcast network, twit.tv. Show notes are online at leo.am, and the chat room is still going at irc.dslextreme.com. A couple of addresses for you. You want to keep the party going. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Have a great week. Right now, let's head to the KFI News Center at 159. Courtney Kramer has the latest. Well, that's it for this edition of the Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.